Love, tolerance and creative freedom aren't just for fairy tales. That's the central message of a new documentary called The Art of Dissent, which celebrates artistic engagement in Czechoslovakia before and after the 1968 Soviet-led invasion. Written, directed and filmed by the American intellectual historian James D. Lesser, the film aims to debunk the myth that life behind the Churchillian Iron Curtain was static and grey, and to inspire viewers through the messages of Václav Havel and fellow former dissidents. Brian Kennedy has more.
Professor James Lesure, head of the history department at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln, says not even Czechs have seen such a documentary before, and not just because it includes exquisite, rare, or even unseen footage. His three-part film, a Czech TV co-production, highlights global elements behind the Prague Spring, Soviet invasion, subsequent normalization period, and Velvet Revolution, which propelled the playwright Václav Havel to the presidency. Another central theme is the question of madness during normalization, both real and imagined. In an interview with Professor Lesure and the film's associate producer, Mariana Čapková, I began by asking how a historian, perhaps best known for his work on violent revolution and colonialism, came to make a film on dissent in Czechoslovakia.
I'm an intellectual historian, so I work on the history of ideas. And in the history of ideas, working on someone like Václav Havel is kind of a dream. So I've been researching and reading and teaching about Havel since 1989. I started teaching in 1992, and I was already teaching Václav Havel. But you're right about the question. I guess the best way to answer that is I was trained as a European historian. I was actually in Germany during reunification. So I was drawn to Václav Havel mostly as a history of ideas person, but also because in my previous work, I've primarily focused on violent revolutions, and I wanted to give a nonviolent revolution a shot. And I also work on the history of colonialism. I approach Czech history in part from a colonial lens. So 1968 to me is an empire question.
Czechoslovakia is a kind of subaltern.
Yeah, in subaltern, but also colonial question. You know, Dubček, you know, later in life in his autobiography, admits he didn't understand from the Soviet position Czechoslovakia was a colony, which I find kind of shocking, given what happened. But it kind of illustrates to me the significance of the history of empire in the history of Czechoslovakia. So I'm just interested in those kinds of questions, and it's part of a larger book I'm writing about the history of anti-colonial movements and the history of nationalist movements in the 20th century.
Was there also any impetus from the Arab Spring, any parallels that you drew from that?
There are some parallels. This is how I think it fits. And there's a very direct link between Václav Havel and Saint North Africa to me. During the 1990s, Havel became a symbol of a state actor who was trying to do something on behalf of dissidents. So he, along with Salman Rushdie and a number of other American and New World intellectuals, formed something called the International Parliament of Writers and created a social organization that would help writers who were being persecuted. They formed it because of what was happening to Algerian intellectuals. Death threats and executions of Algerian journalists, Václav Havel, Salman Rushdie, and a number of people, Jacques Derrida included, formed a group that was basically trying to help writers who were being threatened and imperiled. So I knew that, and I was already doing research for a movie I had already started on that topic. I had reached out to Havel before he died and had set up an interview with Havel. Just couldn't get here because his health was quite bad at the end. But I never got to do the interview with Havel, which would have linked him to the research I had been doing before. This film is a way to kind of accomplish what I wanted to do with Havel.
I was wondering if there was a connection to you joining the faculty at the University of Nebraska, Lincoln, in 2001, because Nebraska has such a huge Czech emigre population and professors on staff teaching Slavic studies and Czech language. Mm-hmm. Did that have an influence as well?
It does. This is how Mariana Čapková and I met. I became the chair of the Department of History 3 years ago, and we have a rather significant Czech endowment that supports Czech history and Czech cultural affairs. So I wanted to do something that would kind of speak to the population in Nebraska. Basically, one out of every two people has Bohemian ancestry or Czech ancestry. So I was interested in trying to do something that would be really significant as a celebration of the 50th anniversary of the Warsaw Pact invasion of Czechoslovakia. So Mariana and I had never met before, but I reached out to her because she had been a student at Nebraska and was connected to cultural things here. So she and I, with a number of other people, created something called Prague Spring 50. Prague Spring 50 was intended to be the biggest commemoration of the Soviet invasion, and it was substantial. This is how I began to think about doing the documentary. I wasn't intending to do a documentary necessarily, but I was interested in doing oral histories with some of our speakers. And Mariana and I decided maybe there's a chance if we approach Czech TV to get access to their archives, maybe there's a chance of blending or oral history approach that I've already been using into a documentary. So that's kind of what we did for 2 years, is trying to negotiate with Czech TV access to the materials. We eventually have, you know, a movie that's going to be in co-production with them and have probably some of the most important archives in the country in our movie.
It's a good time to bring in my other guest, Mariana Čapková. Tell us how you came to study in Nebraska and how this project came about from your perspective.
This is actually a very nice question. There is a really nice scholarship program, the Robíček Scholarship, that brings 4 to 5 students each year to study at the University of Nebraska in Lincoln. And these should be Czech students interested in Czech culture and history, so that they would also bring some Czech knowledge to their American colleagues. When I was accepted to this program, which was in 2007, I also got a job at the university. I taught Czech there, and I studied there for 1 year international relations. And after I came back to Prague, I started to develop more intensive cooperation between Czech universities and the University of Nebraska. A few years after, James contacted me and he asked whether I would know somebody who would be interested in this project, who could help him. It was my first choice to propose that it would be me. It was like a dream come true to help organize Prague Spring 50. And afterwards, this whole project of the movie was developed.
So I understand you're doing a crowdfunding campaign, mm-hmm. and your goal is to have it on the festival circuit this summer and airing on Czech television. Is that right?
Well, our goal is to enter the festival circuit in autumn. It's going to be aired on Czech TV next year. We're trying to organize it so if we make it to the Karlovy Film Festival, it would be on air after that, probably autumn 2020. There are going to be 2 versions of the movie. There'll be a Czech version, and there's going to be an international version. The base of the film is the same, but one's going to be either subtitled or dubbed for Czech TV.
Of course, there have been many Czech documentaries on related subjects, but you're taking a rather different approach, a hopeful approach, as you describe it.
Yeah, I think the message that we're trying to convey is that there was something quite special about the dissident movement in Czechoslovakia from 1968 to the Velvet Revolution. And it was a unique constellation of people, rather small in some cases. But what they did accomplish in terms of their impact on culture, artistic life, etc., was quite significant. This is one of the reasons that Václav Havel was so loved at the end of the Cold War. And so what we want to do, and this has been something that we've been discussing a lot in the actual editing process the last few weeks, is, you know, how do you make a movie about a subject that is quite tough and convey a message of hope, right? I think you do that by focusing on what the message was. And this is why I think I'm attracted to the Velvet Revolution in particular, because it was an effort not to resort to traditional nationalist means to overthrow totalitarian government, but it was more of using instruments like love and tolerance to beat the system, which is a pretty cool way of beating a system. You know, the system can respond to violence or intolerant activities pretty easily by throwing people in jail, etc. But when you're throwing decent people in jail, some Catholic theologians or Jan Patuchka, who died under interrogation, that's a real pretty serious critique of the regime itself that responds to these kinds of people, right? Unless I think we should be clear that we live in a time of growing intolerance, a time that doesn't really discuss the value of love, civic love. And when Mariana and I began to talk about this, we wanted to make a movie that would be a response to that. This is a oblique response. We're not going to name names. We're not going to criticize people individually. But there are definitely elephants in the room in the world context, right? And the other thing I think that's different about the way that we're approaching the movie, Hubble wasn't the only person that was doing this. And so what we're trying to get at is the network of individuals and the value and strength of networks. We're also very importantly trying to introduce the role of women dissidents. We're focusing on a couple in particular who played very prominent roles because women generally haven't been part of the story. And we're trying to make a more balanced approach because women did play very active roles and they weren't just like typing things for the men.
Right. And as I understand it, often a choice was made that only one member of the family would sort of stick their neck out because you have to look after the children. Mariana, I wanted to ask you, as a Czech, getting involved in this process, what did you learn or what assumptions did you have that were maybe challenged?
Actually, I am always saying that the most of I learned about the Czech history, I learned because of James and a group of intellectuals from Nebraska, which is really something that I wouldn't have expected. And I visited many places with James. I discussed with many interesting people that I would probably never get in touch with without this project. And when we were discussing Czech and American version of the movie, the people in Czech TV are somehow pushing us to do like this voiceover for the movie in a more sophisticated way for people who know more about the history. But I am saying that the Czech people around 30, 40 years of age need to get probably the basic information as well. Actually, I am in charge of education at the mayor's office in Prague. And when I visit schools, I see certain kind of lower knowledge of the modern history. And when we are doing a project like this, I think we should reach as many people as possible with as much information as possible.
You mentioned sort of an oral history approach. Are you relying mainly on interviews you conduct yourself?
Primarily. We are using a few interviews from the archives that were conducted by other people. And then we're using a lot of archival material, quite frankly, that no one has seen before. Like, for example, I just did an interview with somebody this morning. I don't want to reveal names or give away secrets, but it was somebody whose film was confiscated by the secret police. He was a young student. He was about ready to go to FAMU. He was making a documentary about a rock group. And the police took it and broadcast it to demonize the rock group. And this is the kind of stuff, I mean, even that story people don't know in the Czech Republic. We have lots of material like that. That's an example of how the oral history blends with the archives. I should say very specifically that I've been very fortunate to work with just a brilliant archivist, Martin Boda at Czech TV, who is ground zero for the film. In many ways, he's really helped us think about using particular archives, rare and really interesting archives. Another example, one of the films that we're going to use is I think the only existing 16mm color film shot during 1968. Martin Boda got it from a gentleman in Catalonia who kept it hidden in a suitcase for 50 years. No one's ever seen it. We're the first film crew to have it. And it's exquisite. It's like watching 1968 in 3D. It's unbelievably beautiful. I mean, I think Czechs think they've seen a lot of this stuff. I guarantee you they haven't because they don't have the rights for it. We're trying to acquire these rights. And it will be, I think, quite a shock when people see what we pull out of the archives.
Was there a core set of questions that you asked narrators about love or civic engagement?
Yeah, I did. I tried to come back to certain themes. One of them is, what is civil society? How was civil society kind of framed during normalization? I think that itself is an interesting question because that comes up oftentimes in Havel's speeches later on. And nature of love. What is the role of dissent? How did these intellectuals or activists respond to oppression, and why did they choose the course of action they chose? Because I think one of the mistakes that we all make is because something happened, we think it had to happen, the inevitability problem. So one of the things we're trying to ask in the interviews is, why was this not an inevitable story? What could you have done differently that would have changed the outcome of the history? And it's kind of a fun question to ask people. Everyone realizes that at certain key points in their life during this, they could have made other decisions. And if they had, it would have either helped or handicapped their movement. It's an interesting thing to think about.
How many flutters of a butterfly's wing does it take to thwart a revolution? I think you wrote basically against the idea of gray life here, that it was all kind of gloom and doom. Mm-hmm. And much has been written sort of on this, the underground and the parallel polis and so on. What is your take on it, actually?
What we're trying to do, and there's some films that we're trying to use to show this, without understanding the color, the vibrancy, the intellectual life, and the kind of possibilities of something much better before the Soviet invasion, normalization doesn't make sense. You have to contrast normalization with this incredible, dynamic, cultural thing that was happening here, right? There was definitely a swift and dramatic end to that after the Soviet invasion. What we're trying to do then is also show why the invasion and the aftermath is so important. And you have to set that against, you know, having these incredible superstars here performing in the streets of Prague weeks before the invasion, and it gives it entirely different flavor. It was very cosmopolitan before 68. And with the closing of the borders, that cosmopolitan worldview ends.
Do you want to reveal some of the names?
Not yet. You have to wait for the movie for that one.
Okay. All right. Is there anything I haven't asked you about that you'd really like listeners to know, whether about the process of the film, the stage it's in, frustrations, joys?
Well, there is a crowdfunding campaign going on, so we'd like listeners to know that we are desperately, not desperate, but we are encouraging listeners to contribute to our beautiful project as much as possible. It's really a movie that's intended to restore hope in politics. That is the intention. When we first started thinking about this movie, it was not called The Art of Dissent. It was called A Beautiful Film. That's what we wanted to convey, that this was, you know, even though it was quite severe and hard to live through this time, something incredibly beautiful came out of it.
I just want to say that we are really trying to do a beautiful movie, like optimistic, in an intelligent and nice way, in a way that I'm actually missing in the nowadays politics.
Right. There are two world statesmen in the 20th century, I think, who are equally important, and for the same reason. One is Nelson Mandela, and one is Václav Havel. Such reified, beautiful, articulate creatures of peace. And that is what we want to convey. That inspiration, using your mind and rationality, not anger and despair, to get politics done. And we hope that that's what viewers take away.